Chapter 3, Amos. Let's read it for what it's worth. And hear this word that Yahweh has spoken against you, O people of Israel, against the whole family that I brought up out of the land of Egypt. You only have I known of all the families of the earth. Very intimate, very beautiful, not true. But from their perspective, that's okay. I mean, as a child, you might think your mother loves you the most, and I think that's all right as a child to think like that. I don't think I've ever thought it, but to me it was pretty obviously not the case. I wouldn't know. But as long as everyone thinks that it's okay, you know, as long as everyone feels special, then it's good that we do. So that they feel special, and that's good, because they are. You only, it's a nice way of saying, I've been specially loving of you people. Therefore, I will punish you for your iniquities. I can't help but think of my father. He was good at belting, I tell you. I thought I'd got a pretty good record till I heard my 5 eldest brothers tell me. I was spoiled, really, softy. But the beaut thing about my dear father, who died 56 years ago or something, was that as soon as the belting happened, it was all gone, there was no psychological overload, and you never doubted you were loved. Well, I don't think that does you a lot of harm. Well, I don't know. It might have harmed me, but I don't look at it as harm, because, and by the way, just to finish the story, I always felt in front with my dad, because I thought, ooh, I got a belting for that, but if I only known about that and that and that. So I was, you know, every time I got a belting, I went away feeling still about 40 love my way, or 45th, 45th. So what I'm trying to say is the image here is of love. Of course love, well, punish mightn't be our favourite word, but of course God is concerned about me and loves me enough to care what I do. And you mums and dads know all about that, and you grandparents know all about that. And the worst thing we can do with anybody is let them free will when they're immature, because they don't know what's good for them. I didn't know what was good for me. None of us do. So we need correction, and we need someone who loves us enough to criticise us, whether we're the Pope or whoever we are. Of course, we've got to make sure the words get to the person that you're criticising, though. You only have I known of all the families of the earth. Therefore, because I know you, and know in the Hebrew Bible always means in this situation intimate knowledge, not know about, but know, the way God knows you. Therefore I will punish you. I won't pretend it hasn't happened in the church or in you or in the parish or in your family. I won't be pretending about this. Do two walk together unless they have made an appointment? Does a lion roar in the forest when it has no prey? Does a young lion growl from its den if it has caught nothing? Does a bird swoop down to the earth to a trap when there's no bait in it? Does a snare spring up from the ground when it's taken nothing? Is a horn blown in the city, and the people are not afraid? Does disaster befall a city when Yahweh has not done it? Up till now, it's terrific imagery. Like, he's one of the most powerful poets. Back in the 8th century, you know, we're a long way, long time ago, but his poetry is good, and apparently the people who know, I know Hebrew enough to translate it, but I don't know enough to feel it, you know. But the people who know the language say it's great poetry here. But see what he said there, we did it last week. Does disaster befall a city when Yahweh has not done it? In other words, his understanding is that Yahweh organises the destruction of the city. It's not my understanding. My understanding is that it destroyed because a more powerful enemy came and destroyed it. Surely the Lord Yahweh does nothing without revealing his secret intention to his servants, the prophets. I've given you the Greek there, paideia, pedagogy. Paideia is the discipline of teaching children, basically. So God's let the servant, the prophet, know. The lion has roared, who will not fear? The Lord Yahweh has spoken, who can but prophesy? Don't blame me, says Amos. I'm speaking from my prayer and what God's saying, and you better bloody well listen, is kind of a nice way of putting it. They do not know how to do right, says Yahweh. Those who store up violence, and just for your curiosity, the Hebrew word for violence is Hamas. Hence the Hamas. They're well named, and they've named themselves. They're into, no one's listening, so we're going to get justice with his violence, basically. And I don't know what to think of it. And robbery in their strongholds. Oh, by the way, violence is the great sin in the book of Genesis. Look at chapter 6. That's the reason for the flood in the book of Genesis. It's the sin, violence. You know, it's top range stuff. And you read the text, it's all about, well, the world has become so violent that God says, I'm sick of it, and he destroys it all except for Noah. It's a story, it's a myth, but it's got truth in it, like all these great stories. Hear and testify against the house of Jacob, says the Lord Yahweh, the God of hosts. When they use that term, which is his, Amos using it for the first time we know about, but it'll come right through Isaiah. Hosts means the heavenly armies. And the heavenly armies, there's two ways of looking at it, and they blend, I think. One is the angels, but the Hebrew Bible is not talking about angels. It's talking about the stars, because they thought, and don't blame them, because right through to the Middle Ages, everybody thought that the stars were living things. They didn't know what we now know. They thought that earth, air, fire, and water, aren't they the four elements? And these are pure fire. These are the purest of beings. And they're there in the heavens, gazing down upon us. No wonder astrology got a good go. And if you're born under that star, it means that star's looking down at this little baby. It's going to affect you for the rest of your life, and so on. So I'm not going to, you know, I won't go on about that. So that's the Lord of hosts means the Lord of the cosmos, the heavenly, this marvelous, life-filled heavens that we gaze at night. On the day I punish Israel for its transgressions, I will wreak judgment on the altars of Bethel. There's our Bethel, halfway between Tekoa and Samaria, and that's probably where Amos is doing a lot of his preaching when the people come there to celebrate a festival. And everyone's got it all ready, and they've got the vestments ready, and everyone's dressed up, and then this Amos appears. And if you're the parish priest, it's the last thing you want. Where the hell do we get... But we like tidy liturgies, don't we? We don't want one of you lot getting up in the middle of the homily and saying, sit down and I'll take over. I mean, no, we don't want that. And I'm not suggesting you should do it. Okay. But if you did it when I was the priest, I probably wouldn't object. Anyhow, that's another matter. I will wreak judgment on the altars of Bethel. The horns of the altar shall be cut off and fall to the ground. I will tear down the winter mansions as well as the summer mansions. The mansions of ivory, this is the wealth of Samaria, will perish. The mansions of the powerful will come to an end, says Yahweh. Hear this word, you cows of Bashan. Now, some of the scholars suggest he's having a go at the women now, wandering around with pendulums hanging from every whatever, and, you know, rich, and maybe he is, but I think it's worse than that. He's having a go at them, because the men are the problem, basically. I mean, well, then they were, not now. But I mean, they were the people with the money, you know, they could only ones who could own land, you know what I mean? The whole culture was kind of male. So I think he's talking about the princes, the leaders of the community, and he's talking to them, pack of old cows from Bashan. You're on the mountain of Samaria. You oppress the powerless. You crush the needy. Same words, we've met him. You say to the lords, to your lords, bring something to drink. Your lords, Baal means husband, yeah, but it means lord as well. So you're saying to these other important people around the place that you invite to your meals, bring something to drink. The Lord Yahweh swears by his holiness, the time is surely coming upon you when they shall take you away with hooks, Now, he doesn't ever mention a particular enemy because there was no particular enemy yet encroaching on them. Otherwise, he would have mentioned Assyria. Don't worry, the next prophet will. But he sees they're not going to be able to stay like this. They'll even take the last of you with fishhooks. They're going to hook onto you and drag you into exile. Through breaches in the wall you shall leave, each one straight ahead, and you shall be flung out from Harmon, says Yahweh. Nobody in the world knows where Harmon is, so don't ask me. Somewhere up there. It's dropped out of history, somewhere up in Syria, probably. Come to Bethel. Yeah, come to Bethel. We've got a big procession going on Saturday week. All of you come, you know. It's a big come to Geelong, come to Kippax, come to, well, the Rheinberger Centre. Come and transgress. See the irony? Come to Gilgal. That's the first of the great sanctuaries down near the Jordan River when they came over the Jordan, Gilgal. And multiply your transgressions. Bring your sacrifices every morning. Gee, every morning, that's terrific. And bring tithes every 3 days. Like, this is perfection, this is good stuff. This is, everyone else brings their tithes once a month, but you bring it every 3 days. Great. Bring a thank offering of leavened bread and proclaim free will offerings. Publish them. Make sure everybody knows. Of course, don't be doing it on the side. For you so love to do it, O people of Israel. Yeah, come on, come to Bethel. Let's have our ceremonies. Let's get the liturgy going. Let's fill our churches, etc. But what's the... But it's not coming from somewhere. It's not meaning stuff. It's not the religious cult is actually a cover for father and son going into Asherah. Who are you really worshipping is what he's asking them. And I've got a thing there from the book of Samuel. Has Yahweh as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of Yahweh? Surely to obey, to listen, to obey is better than sacrifice. And then, again, assuming that assumption I talked about last week, that everything that happens is somehow ordained by God, he says, look, I gave you lack of bread in your places. They went through a difficult time of bad seasons. Yet you did not return to me, says Yahweh. Now, I would say, no, God didn't give it to them. It was there. But the point is, when we go through hard times, there is an opportunity, isn't there, to take advantage of that and think, what am I going? What am I doing with my life? What matters to me? And then rethinking and repenting and so on. So it provides an occasion or an opportunity for thought. I gave you lack of bread in your places, but you did not return to me. I withheld the rain from you when there was still 3 months to the harvest. I would send rain on one city and send no rain on the other city. One field would be rained upon and the field on which it did not rain withered. We know all about this. So two or three towns stagger to one town to drink water and were not satisfied. Yet you did not return to me. Israel depended on the only rain they had that was for, I've forgotten the exact details, but it's no more than 6 months a year. So they built these cisterns to try and hold the water, because for 6 months there's no rain, ever. So it was, if the rain didn't come at the right times, in the good seasons, the early autumn rains and the late rains, etc., then water was a real problem for them, as it can be for us here in our country. So all this happened, you went through all the experiences, but it didn't dawn on you to return to Yahweh. I struck you with blight and mildew. Again and again the locust devoured your gardens and your vineyards, your fig trees and your olive trees, yet you did not return to me, says Yahweh. I sent among you a pestilence after the manner of Egypt. I killed your young men with the sword. I can't see the eyes. God's doing all this in Amos. I don't think we would be thinking like that. But it's all happening, and yet no one did anything about it. I carried away your horses, the tanks of the day, and I made the stench of your camp go up into your nostrils, yet you did not return to me, says Yahweh. I overthrew some of them as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah, and you were like a brand snatched from the fire. Some were killed, there were earthquakes, but you I saved, but you did not return to me, says Yahweh. Therefore, thus have I done to you, O Israel, because I have done this to you, prepare to meet your God. For lo, the one who forms the mountains and creates the wind and reveals his thoughts to human beings, who makes the morning darkness and treads on the heights of the earth, Yahweh, the God of hosts, is his name. So Amos is threatening the people, if they don't wake up, having had all these experiences, it's going to be the end of them. God is going to punish them in their terms for their injustice, basically, and their violence. Chapter 5, for thus says Yahweh to the house of Israel, seek me. Here we are. These are the little bits in that help us. Seek me, that you may live. So it's not all hopeless, but it's saying, do something about it. Wake up. Seek me, that you may live. Don't seek Bethel. Don't go to Gilgal. Don't cross over to Beersheba and make a special journey to Beersheba. Gilgal will surely go into exile, and Bethel will be wickedness. Seek Yahweh. Seek the God of Moses, the God of the Exodus, the God of the liberating God, the God who seek Yahweh and live, or he will break out against the house of Joseph like fire. Joseph, they're the two big tribes of Israel, Ephraim and Manasseh, the two sons. So Joseph is the big tribe of the north. The rest are quite small. It's often called Joseph because it's the... So seek he will break out against the house of Joseph like fire, and it will devour Bethel with no one to quench it. This is the key point, you that turn justice to wormwood, a really bitter, I don't know what you call it, tree, and hurl righteousness to the ground. Have no concern for justice. They hate the one who reproves in the gate. The gate, you might have seen the cities, they're all pretty narrow with all their houses. But, of course, before the gate is the only big square. And that's where the justice happened, that's where the market was, that's where everything, all community things happened at the gate. Inside, of course. So, and that's where justice was carried out each morning. Everyone had a grievance, they'd make it and be all fixed up by that day. Now, if someone reproves, if someone at the gate gets up and says, no, this is wrong, we're doing this, we shouldn't be doing this to the farmers, we shouldn't be demanding so much interest on our whatever, then they're reproved by the elders, the wise elders, who don't want to listen. They abhor the one who speaks the truth. Therefore, because you trample on the powerless and take from them levies of grain, you've built houses of hewn stone. You shall not live in them. You've planted pleasant vineyards, but you won't drink their wine. I know how many are your transgressions, how great are your sins, you who hound the righteous, who take a bribe and subvert the cause of the needy in the gate. I find it just extraordinary that the earliest of the prophets, I shouldn't find it extraordinary, but I do, he's writing for today. Like it's no less relevant. What we do with it is problematic, and every culture is different and so on. But he's not easy to ignore, is he? Seek good and not evil, that you may live. And so Yahweh, the God of hosts, will be with you just as you claim. Yahweh wants to be with them. Wants to be with you and me and us and the church and everything. It's wonderful. All God's desire is for that. And we're claiming it. Well, let's live it. Or it's not happening. Hate evil, love good. That's choice. Establish justice in the gate. You know what that means now, the gate. It may be, says Amos, it may be that Yahweh, the God of hosts, will be gracious to the remnant of Joseph. Alas for you who long for the day of Yahweh. The day of Yahweh, I'll explain it more in the book, of course, is the day when Yahweh comes to establish justice on earth. And everyone's looking forward to it. Because the day of Yahweh, because Yahweh's on our side, you see. He's on the Jewish side. So when Yahweh comes, and the day of Yahweh comes, we'll be shown to be right, they'll all be shown to be wrong, justice will be done, we'll be on top, the rest of them will all be down. Amos cuts right into that theology. It'd have been a pain, a real pain to the theologians of the day. Alas for you who long for the day of Yahweh. We're all longing for that. That's going to be great when the Lord comes, second coming of Jesus. There are different groups in the world. They're going to be zapped. The Catholics, of course, won't be among them, or most of the Christian groups. But they'll be taken up into heaven and then come back to earth for 40,000 years or something and reign on the earth. And it's going to be great for them. Why do you want the day of Yahweh, he says. Why do you want the Lord to come again? It's darkness. It's not light. As if someone fled from a lion and was met by a bear. That's pretty good stuff, really. Or went into a house, rested a hand against the wall and was bitten by a snake. This is all so real. Is not the day of Yahweh darkness, not light, and gloom with no brightness in it? And then he has a go at the cult. Religion is, you know, the word religion is such a good word. Religion comes from Latin. Of course, ligo means to bind. We have it in the word ligament that binds the muscle to the bone, and ligation or something. So now to religo means to bind back. So religion, this is what it's meant to be. This is why the word exists. This is what it should be. It's a good word. And don't listen to anyone who says, let's forget about religion, let's have spirituality. Spirituality is the most vague word in the Blumen Dictionary. You can make it believe what you like. You can have crystals and you can have wind blowing in your left ear and out your right ear. And you can have everything going on in the name of spirituality. So forget about it. Religion is the word to keep, because religion is when everything is bound back, when the world is bound back together, when my behaviour, all of me, is bound together, one, and not a bit of this and a bit of that and a bit of this. So religion is there, and when religion's really religion, it's calling on everybody's gift and binding everyone and listening to everyone and all that beautiful stuff that we all dream of and are part of doing. Well, how do I get onto that? I don't know. Oh, just from the heading, I suppose. Here's what he says about cult. What we do in the name of religion rather than religion. I hate, says God. Now, this doesn't go over too well. I loathe your festivals. I take no delight in your solemn offerings, assemblies. Even though you offer me your burnt offerings and your cereal offerings, I won't accept them. And the communion offerings of your fatted animals, I won't look upon them favourably. Take away from me the noise of your songs. They'll know we are Christians by our love, and they'll know. Well, get out of the place. Pull it out of the socket and close down the microphone. Take away the noise of your songs. I'm not listening to the melody of your harps, even the very gentle stuff that comes out. I'm not listening, says God. Well, of course, he's not against any of those things, neither of the prophets. It's when they're not, here's the point, let right judgment roll down like waters. Let justice be like an ever-flowing stream. Did you bring to me sacrifices and offerings the 40 years in the wilderness? The implication being, no, you didn't. But then you read the book of Numbers and you'd swear they did. So it just depends on, you know. But obviously they didn't. They didn't have the temple and all that going. Do you get the point of all that? So all that top stuff is wonderful when it's an expression of justice. When that's happening, go for it. Bring on your music. Get as many blooming. Bring your harps in. It's beautiful. Sing all your stuff. Do your whatever. But when this isn't happening, all of that doesn't pull the wool over God's eyes, and it shouldn't be pulling it over ours. And I conclude this first half with Amos chapter 6. Alas for you who are at ease in Zion, you who feel secure on Mount Samaria. Alas for those who lie on beds of ivory, sprawled out on their couches, dine on lambs from the flock. Am I blushing? Because I should be. Or on calves from the stall. I'm cooking tomorrow and I'll be getting some of that good stuff for the community. Who sing idle songs to the sound of the lute, and like David, improvise on instruments of music. And again, none of this is in itself bad, but it is bad because it's not doing what the whole of Judaism was about, and certainly Christianity. I was hungry and you gave me to eat, I was thirsty, etc. You who drink wine from bowls and anoint yourselves with the finest oils, but are not grieved over the ruin of Joseph. That's a beautiful line, isn't it? You're enjoying all this, but your heart isn't broken because of what's happening to the people and the poor and the downtrodden, the Anawim and the Dalim and the Ebion among you. Therefore, they shall now be the first to go into exile. Gone will be the revelry of sprawlers.